You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before we get started, I want to personally invite you to Nashville this October for the Pipeline Conference. This year's theme is all about succession. We'll be talking succession all the way from senior leadership at a church down to the preschool volunteer. So this conference is really for everyone. Bring your whole staff. Bring a buddy. Call a friend. Speakers include John Piper, Bob Russell, H.B. Charles, Tom Rayner, Tammy Heim, and many, many more. To register, go to myleadershippipeline.com. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com. Now, enjoy the podcast. You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Atkins.
What?
And I'm
you
here.
You can't do what when you're introducing what? The podcast?
It was a short...
It was a mini what?
It was a mini what? All right. The other two lovely leaders you're hearing from are. Have you ever been referred to as a lovely leader?
That's
Eric?
The first time I can remember being called lovely, that I know of. But my name is Eric Geiger.
Oh, it happens all the time. We just don't tell you.
You should say hun. That's what they say. That's what they do at restaurants here, right?
Come on, hun. It's kind of weird.
It is, yeah.
All right, the other voice that you're hearing is the voice from the north. Daniel. Daniel M., who we imported from Canada.
Legally.
Legally, yes.
Thank you.
Very legally.
Painstakingly legally.
Hey, look, here's the bottom line why we've done that. Number one, he's a rock star. But two, he has experience both in church planting and multi-site in Korea and in Canada.
And he's a young guy. It's not like he's like 48. How old are you?
I am about to turn 32.
Gosh.
I awesome, cannot man. Wait to see what you are when you're our age.
Thanks, Dad.
In your 40s.
Early 40s. But when he's in his 40s.
Really, really early 40s.
You are in your 50s.
That's true. And I'm going to be like, you know, walking around carrying a suitcase and stuff. It's going to be great.
You will still say what?
Oh, I will.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Today, we have a wonderful topic of conversation, and that is how to handle your haters.
But you did spell out for the questions, you did spell out haters fully.
Yeah.
Haters.
Haters.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's important. We're basically talking about critics here, but we just thought we would, you know, we would have a podcast are haters always going to hate.
And this is going to be part instructional, part therapeutic.
Yes.
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 So thanks for listening to our group counseling session.
It'll be a group counseling session, but I'm sure everybody who's listening to this has a hater or two.
They have. Yeah. They do.
Well, actually, that is a good question, a good place to start. Does a leader always have haters? Haters always going to hate?
Okay. So can I tell a little story before we get into that question? All right. So every dinner, after dinner, oftentimes my kids and I will play some tunes and we all go around and they all choose what song they want to sing. So I turn it on the phone and oftentimes my son will always say Life is a Highway because he loves cars. And they all choose a song and inevitably Taylor Swift comes up. Right, Shake It Off. So it's so funny because my son is 3 years old, and every time that song comes on, he'll close his eyes and bob his head back and forth.
He's in the moment. He's shaking off the haters.
But I was like, who's taught you how to dance that? But just in rhythm, in on the beat. Anyways, does a leader always have haters?
Absolutely. A leader always has haters. This quote has been attributed to multiple people, but initially came from
Luther.
Winston Churchill once said, now, Albert Hubbard quipped, "To avoid criticism, do nothing, say nothing, and be nothing." So a leader is not going to do nothing and be a leader long. A leader is not going to say nothing. A leader is not going to be nothing. A leader is going to move people in a direction. So there's going to be criticism. That it's part of what it means to lead and influence others. It's going to be there. You may have varying degrees of it depending on the season that you're in, the decisions that you're making, depending on the influence that the Lord's given you for that run, for that time period. But there's going to be, anytime you're a leader, there's going to be some element of hating going on.
Yeah. And if you're leading well, you're going to have haters.
Even if you're leading poorly, you're going to have haters.
Well, that's the question. Just because you have haters, if you have a high hater quotient, it doesn't mean you're leading well. It could mean you are leading really poorly. But if you are leading by the very definition of it, you're going to disrupt some things.
It's just whether or not you hear about it, right? Because sometimes you don't hear about the hating and other times you're more verbal, but I think you're going to hear, and even if you're
not hearing verbally, a leader typically is perceptive and can sense the nonverbals, is aware of the hallway conversations or the things that take place out of the meeting offline.
Yeah. We had Bob Goff on the podcast a few episodes back, and I remember
him and Maria.
Yeah. Bob and Maria together. So I remember this, what he said every time. If you follow him on Twitter, he gets massive interaction, not just retweets and likes, but a lot of comments. And what he says is every time a hater reaches out to him or comments on him, instead of muting or blocking them right away, right, which I know some other leaders often do, he'll actually click on their profile and look through their feed and look at their profile and try to find something that he can learn from them. And then he mutes them.
Oh, and that's if he doesn't know their address. If he knows their address, he's going to duck them.
Yes.
And duck them means what?
Means he's literally going to send them a bunch of ducks to
live
their house.
Live ducks
to their house.
Little baby ducks.
If he really doesn't like them, he'll send them Peking ducks because they stick around the longest. But normally, he's like, when you duck somebody, he ducks people for fun as well, because there's some ducks that they're just there for a few days.
So and if you've gotten ducks from Bob Goff,
you have to, how long were they there? If they were there a short time, he just wanted to surprise and delight you.
It wasn't a present.
If they were there for 6 weeks, it was to spite
something
you.
There's something you did.
Which you'd have to be a pretty naughty person.
I was going to say, you'd have to be an idiot to not think, these ducks have been around here a long time. But honestly, a lot of haters are so poor at self-perception. They may be like, Bob Goff, send me some ducks.
Do some selfies with the ducks. Shout out to Bob Goff.
I'm gonna mention this, and I can't remember the name of the candle company.
Did you ever end up doing it?
No.
Did you? Okay.
There's this candle.
Are we gonna have links in the show notes to both of these products?
Probably should. But there was this company that, like, you know, at first it would smell like French vanilla, and then it would go into something, you know, like rancid skunk, or I can't remember, but it would.
They look like the Yankee candles.
It looks straight up like a Yankee candle, and it's more of a prank than a thing you do to somebody you don't like.
But so good.
It was like, you know, hey, it's warm apple pie, and then about 30 minutes in, it gets down to rancid skunk, and then it starts to go flip and switch the other way. Sorry.
I mean, are you okay?
I can't remember how
it's
we found
whether or not
him.
He executes on him.
But I mean, we need to talk about something right now.
No.
Is this when we move into a counseling session?
Yeah. I mean, something's going on there, man.
All right. So number two, how much attention should we give to those who be hating?
Oh, gosh.
I just read it like the question. Who be hating?
This was just written on a post-it note.
Okay, one thing. I know for sure now, and this isn't hating. This is just straight feedback. Daniel M. has never wrapped a bar.
Hey, you know, I used to break
in
dance.
His life.
He did used to break dance.
You may have break danced, but you have never wrapped a bar.
Get a piece of cardboard out.
You look much cooler than you just sounded.
Okay, but Eric Geiger is a really good rapper.
I'm not even going to try after what just happened. All right, so second question was, how much attention should we give to those
who are hating?
So I think it depends completely on the person and the context. It's a hard question. It's the right question. It's a wise question. So it comes down, do you make a distinction between criticism and feedback? Mm. So if you don't make a distinction between those two, then I think you need to listen often. However, if you make a distinction between criticism and feedback, then I always want to listen to feedback, and I want to listen to very little criticism. That's if, I want to, please don't misquote me on this. That's if you are making a distinction between feedback and criticism.
How do you make that distinction?
So feedback isn't only if I ask for it. Feedback is from people who I trust,
okay,
who I know that they're godly. They actually want what's best, not just for me. It's not about me, but they want what's best for the organization, or they want what's best for the mission of the organization. As opposed to you could say feedback's constructive criticism, but I personally, helps me silo it off between criticism and feedback to view those as differently. I don't agree with the statement that there's a kernel of truth in all criticism. I think that's a cliche. That's not true.
Consider the source.
I think there are some people who are just perpetual and consistent angry haters who don't, that there's no truth at, there's only emotion. There's no logic. There's no truth at all in what they're bringing. And sometimes what they're bringing, what they're offering is anti-Christian, anti-truth, anti-reality. And so to think, I got to find some kernel in there. There's not always a kernel of truth.
Social media has amplified.
Oh yeah,
right. It's given everyone a voice. So, what are your Earl's perspective on the whole idea of anonymous feedback? Then
I am not. I don't listen to anonymous feedback.
Okay,
if you can't put your name on it, then don't send me the letter. Or, you know,
do you even email, like, if it is a letter or
I don't get anonymous feedback. I mean, okay. every person who's ever screened my emails or mail that comes in knows that. I have a very limited amount of emotional and mental energy, just like every one of us, and time. That's all we have. The amount that we've been given by the Lord graciously. And I don't want to steward it towards trying to solve, and I don't even know how to respond.
Yeah.
It's just a waste.
Okay.
So, but if it's not,
yeah.
So for instance, like Bob, I've had people, you know, come at me on social media or criticize me or Lifeway or, you know, something. And the first thing I do when that comes in through social is I do look at their feed.
Okay.
And I would say, unfortunately, about half the time you can look at their feed and see, oh, this is a negative. Mm. This is a toxic kind of, they just, you know, that's yelled at ICBY for having bad ice cream or, you know, whatever. I mean, that's a literal thing that happened. I opened up a guy's feed, and the last thing he did was complain about a yogurt shop. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, was it a good yogurt shop that he was complaining about?
It was like a chain, I think it was. Yeah.
Okay. And that's why I moderate comments on my website now, because I feel like before I moderated them, I just get these random people posting, and I'm like, man, this is just, you don't know me. I don't know you.
It's vindictive.
You don't know the context.
You don't even know me.
Yeah, exactly. So, but what's interesting is once I turned on the whole moderation, I haven't gotten those as nearly as often, which I think once they try to submit it, they're like, oh, wait, this has to be moderated. I guess it's not going to go through.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
Now, on that question, I wanted to ask you all this. There are some people who say, hey, okay, if you give credit to those who encourage you, then you're going to, in equal measure, listen to those who criticize you, right? So it's this whole, I've heard this perspective from leaders where it's like, so don't really
I know
feed off the encouragement because that's going to give fire and fuel to the criticism when it comes.
I think that the wisdom in that is, it's the counsel of, hey, if you get overly rejoicing in the great things that happen, you're the same kind of leader who's going to be demoralized when bad things happen.
Because it's an identity
thing. Because that's where you find your identity.
Yes.
So it's good. To me, it's more about, where am I finding my identity? I want to learn from feedback, both feedback that is complimentary and feedback that is constructive to help. But I don't want to find my identity in that feedback.
Yeah.
Both good or bad.
That's good.
I want to find my identity in the Lord, because, man, the feedback is going to, it is going to change. It's going to come and go. Who the Lord is and what he's done for us and in us, that's what is consistent.
Yeah. Good deal.
That's good.
All right. I'm going to ask our next question. So who should you talk to about your haters? I mean, if you keep this stuff in,
yeah, this is a tough question. I think I've changed my view on this question.
From what to what? Or are you in transition right now?
from what to what? I probably early in ministry overshared with my wife, with Kat.
Yep, I would say that.
And yep, so what I think I've learned is the more I share, the more I can not only get cynical myself, but I can even cause people I love to get cynical. Here's the struggle about the criticism in leadership is it can, if you don't protect your heart, it can cause you to get cynical and not trusting of people and paranoid. So I have learned, this is going to sound just like I'm trying to throw the Jesus Trump card down, but it's true, that the person I really want to talk to about this is the Lord, because I know I can cause Kay to get overly defensive about, I can share something with her and 2 weeks later she's asking me, hey, did so-and-so get back with you? Did so-and-so say?
And everything's cool now.
Right.
Yeah.
Or I forgot about it.
Exactly.
And I have.
But they're dwelling.
Yeah, I have infuriated something in her that it's not best for her. It's not best for me. So I try to not share, but there are a couple times where there's some trusted people that I've pulled in and when something's been painful, but I've tried to first go to the Lord with it.
Yeah, I agree with you there, because I've noticed stuff with Christina when I would overshare or maybe share too often. The things that I do share with her are maybe if it's something that is an ongoing issue and it's not just one person saying something,
yeah,
but it's ongoing and it's like, hey, let's work on this or whatnot. That's when I would kind of bring it to them. But I feel like for those who are listening, right, it can easily be interpreted, hey, if you're not going to share it with your wife because, or your spouse because of those issues, then who can I share it with? And I would say, don't ever share it with, if you're not sharing it with your spouse, don't ever share it with someone of the opposite sex.
Right.
Because that really opens the doors.
That's wise, man.
Very wise.
It really opens the doors. So as a result, I try as hard as I can.
You don't want a deeper level of intimacy with a man or woman other than your spouse.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Totally. So,
and don't let them do that with you either. Mm-hmm. Because that creates an unhealthy attachment.
Yeah. So I find the more I talk about these issues, the more it works me up, yeah, the more I dwell on it. So I agree with you in the sense that I just kind of give it to Jesus, right? And I try not to think about it.
I'm going to put another spin on this. Not a spin, but really another way to look at it. And that is, if there are people that my wife knows, I'm much less likely to share something that would color her opinion of them.
Yeah.
That's a short-term issue in a longer-term, you know, connection or relationship. So yeah. I might share a criticism from left field or somebody she doesn't know or something that's been said publicly more than I'm going to share something that, you know, might be somebody that she's connected to that would ultimately affect our relationship with them or another couple, or just shade her view of somebody I'm going to be working with long term.
Yeah. So this next question is when do you dismiss them and when do you deal with them? Really continues on what we're talking about right now. It brings it to the next level, right? So yes, we do give it to Jesus, but in the sense of, you know, let's kind of flesh that out a little bit. When should you deal with criticism? And when should you dismiss it?
So if the criticism is from someone who's a believer, I mean, there is, go to your brother, make things right with your brother in the Lord. So I want to have that posture. I don't want to be dismissive, even if the criticism is feels unfounded, not grounded in reality. Even if it's sharp and with sharp tongue, I still want to pursue the way Jesus pursued me. However, there is a time to move on. There's a time to move on from the critics and from the person who's hating. And here's when I know it's time to move on. If every word, as I pursue, if every word is parsed, then I know the person has already made their mind up. They already have conclusions.
Yes.
And they're just looking for things to justify their... There's no way I'm going to be able to move the person to a different position. Okay. They've already decided, and now they're just parsing everything I say to validate what they've already concluded.
Yeah.
And then another way I know to move on, if there's no way to have a logical conversation, it's only emotional. All the emotions are constantly heightened. The pursuit of the person, the pursuit of the critic, doesn't yield any fruit at all. It just keeps heightening the level of frustration even for that person. And then also I know it's time to move on. And Todd, you mentioned checking someone who was constantly criticizing everything. If the past is repeating itself, so the person who caused a church split at the last church they were at,
yep,
and then comes to your church and is like awesome the first 2 years, but then all of a sudden gets hypercritical. The past is repeating.
Yep. Yep.
The past is repeating. And unless the Lord changes that person's heart, the past is going to continue to repeat. And so there are times to move on from the hater.
Yeah. Yeah. Henry Cloud says your past is the greatest predictor of your future.
It is. Unless the Lord does something, it's for sure. It is clearly the greatest current predictor we have. Yeah. Obviously the Lord can step in and do anything he wants, but it's the greatest predictor.
Yeah.
Well, I would say I've seen at least in one church setting where it got to a point where there was not a decent enough contingent. There was a very loud contingent of critics to where the pastor, dealt with those things according to scripture, did everything he was supposed to do. And it came to a point where he had to ask for a vote of confidence say, if we get 80%, then I'm staying. If we don't get 80%, I'm leaving. Wow. But if I get 80%, you're leaving.
Oh, wow. So what happened?
He got 81% and they left.
They bolted. What happened after that?
The church exploded in growth and it was amazing.
Huh. Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, hey, cause I'm telling you 19% doesn't feel like 19%.
No.
Yeah. That feels like 90%.
It feels
massive. Cause of relationships.
I'm saying the criticism from 19%. Mm. I heard John Maxwell said one time that the average pastor leaves over 7 people in the church, basically haters or those who constantly spew just constant criticism. They feel much louder than they actually are.
Yeah, which I believe is why we need to give some time, and we don't have to always respond immediately to them in the emotion. Even when I do get or I have gotten criticizing emails or whatnot from churches that I've served at, it's from people, I would just, as much as I'd want to reply right away because I'm fuming, sometimes I'll just wait and I'll just let myself calm down and try not to think about it. And sometimes it's going to calm down from them, their end. But I find that anytime I've sent a response right away, they often will respond right away. And it starts going back and forth, back and forth. So I'm like, no, you know what? This is, I don't know why you said what you said, but I'm going to give some time and give some space and see what happens.
That's a good word too.
It's good.
All right. Last question.
Fifth question. All right. I think, Todd, you might have done a little prep, which you never really do for these. You just kind of usually wing it. But I think you might actually put some names or some categories.
So I was thinking. Question. I was just thinking about it when we were.
Well, let me ask a question. Let me ask a question first. All right, here we go. What are the types of haters that you frequently encounter? Give us some categories, Todd. What are the types of quadrants. Haters?
Oh, yes, quadrant. I do not have a quadrant, and this sounds more well thought out than it is. I just was thinking about different types of haters, and I got like 2 or 3 written down before.
Tell us.
Okay, so there's the keeper of the status quo.
That's good.
You're going to have that in every church or organization, people that like the way things are, and if you start to change anything, they are going to come out with great force and vehemence. I think there's the guy that comes to you with constructive criticism, but it's really destructive.
Bunny ears, constructive criticism.
Yes, very big bunny ears, because they come under the cloak of, hey, I just want to give you some constructive criticism. Yeah. And what they do is they bring out all these points and situations where you're wrong, but they bring nothing helpful. They bring no solutions or no encouragement to the right direction. It is completely destructive, not constructive.
They haven't just put the knife in you.
Oh yeah.
It's
And they may, you know, they may come back around again. And then there's that unhappy person who is toxic.
Eeyore.
Yes. Eeyore would be great, except, you know, I don't know if we can technically use that or we might be sued.
Yeah.
But it's Eeyore. You know, hey, they're kind of looking through everything with, I don't know, whatever the opposite of rose-colored glasses are, that just kind of...
Which can be helpful. It can be occasionally, but not if you're
good
always...
encouragement there,
Daniel. Yeah, not if you're always that way.
Yeah. Let me give another category. It's the critic, the hater, who always has to have a fight.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it's the person who, and sometimes they actually had a great fight. They needed to stand up for something. They needed to push something that through in an organization or in a ministry that was so helpful, but now they miss it. They miss having something to stand for. They miss having a flag to wave. They miss having a fight to fight. And so, I mean, you know how it is when you're a leader. You like that. You enjoy getting things done. You enjoy accomplishing. And so all of a sudden that problem solved and gosh, you've lost a little bit of your worth. You've lost a little bit of your place. And so you look for another problem to solve, which then unfortunately a person, unless they're finding their identity in the Lord, they're finding their identity in what they're attacking or what they're fighting. So they're looking for something else to fight.
Yeah.
And then they become very, very critical. They just need a fight. They need a fight. They need to have something to speak against. I want to be really careful of those people because they're going to perpetually need to have something to fight against.
It's The only other one I had that was scratched down was green eyes, which is all about jealousy. I mean, it's really, they have their own sense of inadequacy and all they can think to do is either you've got a spot that they want, you've got a position, you've got leadership, you've got influence, you've got something that that they want and covet, and therefore they're just going to gonna torpedo you.
Todd, you got to make this into a quadrant, man. Yeah. This is good, bro.
It is.
You can't. I don't think I can make it into a quadrant.
I have some ideas.
Really?
Yes. I mean, you could think about it. You could put personal, organizational on one axis. You're giving me a stink eye.
No, I'm thinking. That's okay, not a stink eye.
So personal, organizational. Then it could be... about motives on the other side. Mm. So direction of the critique and motive of the critique. Think about it.
I'll think about that one.
Quadrant this.
If I can figure it out, we'll blog it.
Well, I'll put it on hashtag.
I'll guest blog on Eric Angerson's
blog. And do a hashtag 9ESL video as well.
Oh, that'd be fun.
If you haven't looked up hashtag 9ESL on Twitter or on YouTube, look up Todd Adkins, hashtag 9ESL.
It's mostly because I hate blogging and I love visual stuff. So
no, it's legit.
It is really good.
Yeah.
He's really good with marker boards.
Yeah.
He is. I mean, he really is.
You know, he's letting me do two of them.
Yeah. He's doing two today. He's taping two today.
That's cool. So I'm excited.
From his book, No Silver Bullets.
With the matching shirt.
With the matching shirt.
It's got a new quadrant in it that I'm pretty geeked out about.
So I really appreciate how the last one is green eyes, right? I do. And I like how you said eyes because they're... People who are, if you're filled with envy and if you can't rejoice in someone else's, you know, celebration, or you can often kind of, you can see it in their eyes. It's kind of like that whole Malcolm Gladwell blink. You can, there's behavior, there's attitude, there's something. So, I mean, that really goes back to your motives. right? I mean, what is your motive in hating, in your big bunny ear constructive criticism? What is your motive? Is it really to help, or is it to tear down? Help or hate, right? So
help or hate.
Help or hate.
That's good.
That's good.
That's good. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. Please go to iTunes, leave us a rating and review. I don't know if we will have crossed the line yet, but we are super close to 1 million downloads, dudes.
Yep.
Really?
A mil.
Dun, dun, dun.
And a 200th episode.
So that's a lot of downloads.
It is. I didn't realize it was that big of a deal until I talked to a few people.
No wonder random people stop you in airports and ask you to do the what?
I do occasionally have that happen.
That's,
I had one guy ask me to leave it on his voicemail, and I was like, really?
Did you do
really?
That for him?
I did not.
You're such a hater. No, you're a green-eyed hater.
Share the love.
That was messed up. That was messed up. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening, and tune in next time and tell about five people about this episode in particular.
Thanks for listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. Before you go, we want to invite you one more time to join us in Nashville this October 11th through 13th for the Pipeline Conference. It's important to also note this conference did sell out last year. So if you're planning on attending, go ahead and get in early.